everybody, and welcome back inside the Shark Tank for another episode of the pod. My name is Lewis, and I'm joined for the first time in what feels like an eternity by both my co-hosts, Alex and James. And Alex, you know, we're coming to the listeners off the back of Sale's second defeat on the trot in the Premiership, 24 points to 22, away in Exeter at the weekend. With that as the backdrop, how are you feeling?
Yeah, slightly disappointed after the weekend. Not as disappointed as I used to feel about these kind of losses. I think, you know, I'm quite appreciative of our position in the league table, of the buffer we've built up. You know, this is still a really good season. We've had two really tough losses on the road, but two close losses on the road as well. You know, both losing bonus points, both probably winnable games, really, and you know, we are 5% off. So, I mean, don't get me wrong, I was really frustrated on Sunday. I think there's a lot to go into in the game, and it was probably there for the taking, which is always a shame when you go to Sandy Park, because it's not often you get a chance to win down there. Usually it's kind of out of your hands, really. So I think there's a frustration, but with a couple of days of kind of reflection, I think this season is still a really, really positive one. We're still bedding in players coming back from injury in George Ward and Rafi Quirk, and that was never going to be a drop them in and they'll slot into the team nicely and function and everything will just be, you know, rosy. It was going to be hard to bring them back in. So there's still, you know, there's still time in this season to do that, to a point where, you know, if we're in a Premiership semi-final, we're starting it with our strongest team, both our strongest available team, but also probably our strongest squad team. So, yeah, I think there's plenty of causes for optimism, but, yeah, a frustrating result because it was there for the taking, I think. Anyway, how are you?
Yeah, no, I think you're right in that you do look at these results very differently now. Two losses on the bounce is a bit alarming, and we've got Saracens at home next week, which is going to be a tough encounter. And all of a sudden, you're like, oh, you know, could that be three losses on the trot? But I think the difference now is we've just had a tough run of games. Saints away, tough game. Chiefs away, Saracens at home potentially. But you now back us to do the business when we, you know, play Newcastle at home or Bath at home, and it's been that way for a couple of years now. And like you said, you can kind of look at these games as being positives in the fact that, okay, we've lost two on the bounce, but we've got 3 points off the back of it, and we've got such a healthy buffer still, you know, in second place in the league, that it does really sort of change your perspective on things. James, do you share mine and Alex's rosy outlook on the season at the moment?
No. Because I think the buffer is there, that's true. And the way that the season's worked with home games and away games, that's in the back of my mind with the amount of away games still to go and home game being Saracens, that's really tough. And we know that rugby is a momentum game. And when you actually look at Sale's results over the last few weeks, you know, we've lost to Toulouse. We've lost to Ulster. We beat Bath by 3 points, right? We got hammered by the Bears. We got hammered by the Chiefs. Yes, it's in the Premiership Cup, but this is, you know, the feeling in and around this training ground, isn't it? And if you get hammered down at the Chiefs 1 week and you're back like the next week, it's quite difficult to turn that around psychologically, honestly. I've done that. I remember when we went to play like a sevens tournament at Caldy once when I was playing for Wilmslow, and we got absolutely pumped that week. And then you walk up the next week for the semi-final of the Cheshire Cup in the 15s game, and psychologically you're not in the same place. And I know it's a different squad, but it isn't. You know, we're a small squad. We train together. They eat in the same canteen. They've been beaten up 2 weeks in a row. And don't forget, the first team have been beaten up in the Champions Cup as well. And beating Bath is hardly a ringing endorsement at home, is it, at the moment? Let's be perfectly honest. Then you lose at Saints and Chiefs. Yes, we've taken away 3 points from that, so it's not a complete disaster. But they're close games that we have now lost. So I think we've now won one in seven, is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1 in 7 this year. So I think I see it quite different. You know, we're now going into a home game, which is, you know, the last home game until we, you know, but basically for the season, I mean, there or thereabouts, certainly for a long time, with our confidence a bit lower, missing a few key players. You know, it's a massive, massive, massive game because you look at Saints, they are on a roll. They've just beaten Gloucester, who are, you know, challenging also for that top four role. Our only hope is that they're all taking points off each other, right? I think this is going to be really, really tough for us. Sorry to be doom and gloom. We can talk about the game and the context of the Saints and Chiefs game in isolation, but I just can't see it in isolation right now.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that Chiefs game. Obviously, Sale go down 24 points to 22, three tries apiece, and obviously Sale were looking pretty good for midway through the first half, at least, as they sort of took an early 10-point lead. Alex, I mean, what kind of went wrong for Sale on the day? Because actually, relatively speaking, it wasn't a massively high-scoring game. A lot of the points get scored in the first half. It's a penalty. A goal that kind of wins it for Exeter on the day. You know, is this just a case of, you know, what's the kind of like, you know, fatal cause here? Was it in the ill discipline from Sale's side? Was it not being able to stop Josh Hodge dancing through the defensive line? You know, where do you stand on this? Kind of where did Sale lose this one?
I think, honestly, there's a 10-minute period at the end of that first half that costs us the game. You know, we have two players yellow carded in Dugdale and Rod. And I think that's born of ill discipline generated. I thought the Bevan Rod yellow was a little bit harsh, but I didn't actually listen to Luke Pearce's explanation because I wasn't listening with the sound on, so he may have had a very good reason. But anyway, so we're down to 13. There's a load of space on the pitch. Next to have got one of the fastest blokes in the country in Josh Hodge with, you know, loads of room. And they make us pay for that in effect. And it was, you know, kind of, it was a real 10-minute spell of we were just on the back foot. Exeter sort of managed that period very well in a way that I don't think we did. You know, the game got very loose. It got open. Obviously, we didn't have enough defensive numbers. And they got to the edge. And once they found the edge, it was always going to be, it was kind of a foregone conclusion, really, you know. You can put the best defenders in the world against Josh Hodge. But if they're one-on-one, then he is probably going to beat most of them most of the time. He's just got a ridiculous amount of pace. So I think, and that's really, those two tries cost us the game, because you look at the rest of the game outside that 10-minute period or whatever it was, and listen, yeah, we didn't then do enough to compensate for that 10 minutes, but we did enough to win the game if you take out that 10-minute period. I thought we were competitive. I thought the defence was good. I thought the attack showed glimpses, but obviously naturally stuttered with George Ford in at 10 because he hasn't been playing in our squad. And I thought the tactical kicking actually was really good, especially from Ford. I think he's clearly right back on that kind of, you know, that element of his game is still massively there and will be huge for us. Putting us in the right places, you know, finding space in the backfield. That's something that, you know, Rob is a very, very good player and has had an absolutely outstanding season. But George Ford's tactical kicking is a level above, I think. And that's really important in the modern game. You only have to watch England Wales this weekend to see how important good kicking and bad kicking can be. So I think it's honestly that 10 minutes just... And we used to do this a lot as a squad. We used to have a 10-minute meltdown in games that cost us the game overall. So it was kind of a bit of a throwback to that. But I think really what that comes down to is the discipline. And it comes down to the fact that we had two players yellow carded. And similarly to the Saints game, and listen, let's be honest, we didn't lose this game because of refereeing decisions. We did lose the Saints game because of refereeing decisions. There's absolutely no way that if any of the two yellow cards and the two forward passes go our way rather than the Saints', that we lose that game. So that's why, you know, I'm not concerned about that game. This one is... It's a bit more frustrating because I think certainly the first yellow card was justified. And the second one, you could argue, probably is. I mean, it's a very brave call from Luke Pearce. I don't think many other refs make it, but that's what you get when you get international referees refereeing Premiership games on Six Nations weekends. You know, they've got to make brave calls. Yeah, I think it's honestly comes down to that discipline, and it's been an issue for us for a long time. And it's interesting that now it's not kind of, you know, when it's an accidental head-on-head and someone gets sent off, you can kind of forgive them. But when it's giving away a load of penalties that result in a team yellow card for Sam Dugdale and then a cynical killing the ball call on Bevan Rudd, it's harder to kind of be sympathetic to it. And listen, that's what we've got. That's the key area of our game we've got to sort, because the attack is working, the defence is working, the kicking is looking good. But the discipline is killing us. And what's interesting is we conceded the same number of penalties as Exeter in the game. So this isn't a we've had bad discipline. It's that our bad discipline gets concentrated in really short areas that then costs us over the longer game, because we go down to 14, 13 men. And that's 2 weeks in a row we've been down to 13 men, I think, isn't it? So you just can't win games like that.
Mm. And that's a really good point about the fact that it's the second week on the trot we've had a time where we're down to 13 men. Like, how many teams can win games consistently when you're down two players for such a long period of time? It reminds me a little bit, actually, of when Axe first joined. You know, where we had that run where we won like 8 or 9 on the bounce, but we were winning games like away at Wasps where we had 13 men for 20 minutes or whatever, and that wasn't sustainable. And what we're finding out now is, you know, 2 years on, it still isn't sustainable. But it's a really interesting point as well about how, you know, the amount of penalties we're conceding isn't necessarily egregious. It's just they're all coming within a 3, 4, 5 minute span when we're under pressure a little bit. And you do wonder whether or not, is that because of the amount of changes in the team? You know, these players aren't necessarily as familiar playing with each other. You know, Oosthuizen's come back in, Rod's, you know, come back in, Ryan Mills starts at 12, and there just maybe isn't that familiarity that the guy next to you's got you back, you know, so all of a sudden you make a dive on the ball, that kind of thing. Is there an element of that? Is it just a case of, you know, we fell on the wrong side of the ref? It's hard to say, but I guess, you know, James, from your perspective, when you watch this game back, realistically, Sale still did enough or had enough ball or enough territory to win this game, even with the penalties, even with the yellow cards. But we didn't really do enough to quite get over the line, particularly in that first half. We scored 10 points. Second half, we scored 12 points. How much of that do you think is a symptom of the changes we're seeing in the back line at the moment? Ford starts at 10, Dupria goes to 13, where he has been effective, but hasn't played there basically all season. Ryan Mills is the starter at 12 because of Tuilagi's suspension. How much importance do you place on the sort of disjointment along the back line as a reason for us losing this game?
I think it's one of two factors why we lost the game. The first factor is ill discipline. And that's what cost us in the first half. You know, it wasn't just the yellow cards. It was the penalties in and around getting those yellow cards, which just put us under significant pressure. Being marched back 10, you know, Bevan Rudd, Johnny Hill, just absolutely, just mindless. I mean, Johnny Hill's in particular, just completely mindless penalties. And I think that having been dropped by England, he's in danger of being dropped by Sale as well at the moment, honestly, just due to his constant lack of discipline. And then the second reason why we lost, I just thought was, you know, it was a bounce of the ball for Tom O'Flaherty in the first half, because we were down to 13 men. And if that had popped up into his hands and he'd got over the line there, we would have stretched our lead out by even a little bit more. But more importantly, it would have used up about 3 minutes of time. And, you know, you consider actually what happened after that. You know, we kind of cracked and then conceded two tries, and it was all, you know, tough for us from that position on. Credit to the lads coming back in the second half, because I think I thought we were really poor in the first 10 minutes. And, you know, we could have conceded a couple of very early tries. I mean, we were all over the show. And the back line being disjointed to come back to the premise of your question is actually the third factor, and in particular Rob Dupuyer. And this is, I don't want this to be a criticism of Rob in particular. I do think, you know, it was a selection decision that probably sacrificed this result. Now, I'm not saying that it won't come back in a positive way later in the season in knockouts if we've managed to get George Ford up and running at 10 and Rob Dupuyer is finding the form he had at 10 at 13. Of course, if you've got two of your best players on the pitch playing in the form that we know they can, we can win the Premiership. But for this game, George Ford, especially in the first half, was a little bit out of sorts. I thought he had a very good second half. And then Rob Dupuyer had just an absolute shot. I've very rarely seen a poorer game from Rob Dupuyer. And he's had a few shockers and then always bounced back. And I really hope he does again. But it was a selection decision that was made in the knowledge that this was going to be tough for us defensively. Because last week we took off Sam James and moved Rob Dupuyer to 13. And that could have cost us the game then. Taking off Sam James was a mistake in that regard at Saints, because he's such a good defender, controlling his feet, reading the play, understanding when to go in, understanding when to attack, showing the outside. And Austin Healey did an absolute number. You know, I'm not always the biggest fan of Austin Healey, but his analysis of the Rob Dupuyer at 13 channel was absolutely exceptional. He was absolutely spot on every single time. You could see the man going, what do I decide to do? And at least in the first half, every decision he made was wrong. Every single one. And not just defensively, also in attack. There was one point where he was obstructing, getting in the way of his own players. He was wandering ahead of the play. He literally didn't know what he was supposed to be doing, bless him. And I do think that was a massive problem, because you look at the extra tries and line breaks, which gave them field position. A lot of that was in and around the 13 channel, given our wingers, you know, real lack of certainty about whether our 13 was going to make the right call. That pulled them in and gave Exeter's wingers room on the outside. You know, and Woodburn and Noel are not really known as players who will be running up and down the tram lines. They're usually players that go looking for work, you know, sort of second, third receiver out, like a Flaherty does as well. So I think that it was a... I hope this comes back and pays off. If Sam James might have needed some time off his legs, but based on how important he is to the overall structure of the team, I think Sam James can be a little bit aggrieved that he's ended up being dropped for this game. So does that answer your question?
I think it does. Yeah, I think I do wonder, and we saw this a little bit when Axe first started, and the wholesale changes that were happening on a week-to-week basis. And I know we are at the point where, you know, Tom Curry's away with England, and then he's back, and then Ben Curry's away with England, and Bevan Rod's in the training camp, and Rafi Quirk is, and they're not, etc. I know there's a lot of disruption in the squad at the moment. I do think, though, there are questions, maybe not firm questions, but questions about the selection choices being made by the coaching brass. And I think we've now had a couple of years of Sanderson with his own squad and the squad he inherited from Dimes. I'm still not 100% positive every time Sale take the field, we've necessarily picked the right squad. And what I mean by that is, we obviously aren't privy to what happens on the training pitch and whether or not Sam James has got a knock or whatever. But to the point James has just made, the idea to get Dupuyer out at 13 and bring Ford in at 10 really felt like it was a decision that was shoehorned, right? This was George Ford is back. He's fit. He can only really play 10, but Rob Dupuyer is in great form. We need to find a space for him in the team. Let's move him to 13. And it just feels like maybe this is, again, probably a learning experience for Axe, which is sometimes it's not about getting your form 23 on the pitch. It's about getting the 23 that are going to work the best together. And I just think not having Sam James in at 13 was a big call. I think I've got some questions as well about how we're rotating Aaron Reed and Tom Roebuck on the wing alongside Tom O'Flaherty, because there doesn't necessarily appear to be as much rhyme or reason to it. It kind of feels like it's a baked in rotation rather than one that's determined based on the playing, the opposition playing squad. I think there's just a few questions that I think are worth mentioning. And I think when you look back and you look at, you know, the fact that Dupria wasn't in a position to succeed on Sunday, it does feel like maybe there's still a little bit to go from an experience perspective for Axe to kind of hit that top end Premiership DOR and kind of really propel Sale to the next level. That's my thoughts on it. Alex, James, before we move on to Saracens, because there's a lot to go through this week with Six Nations chat as well, is there anything else you want to mention from the Exeter game?
I think you and Ashman's back in form, which is good timing with Aka being off. So, you know, I thought there were some really good individual performances out there. To go down to the Chiefs and come away with a losing bonus point, having been adrift at half time, I hope they now say, okay, well, that's our half where we now turn around this 1-7 and we have a massive game against Saracens. And then once again, if we beat Saracens, the table looks completely different again because, you know, we should be able to hold on to second if we do that. Just with the way that points are exchanged when other teams play each other and things like that. If we lose on that and Saints, we have another good weekend, then you know, I think we're suddenly not the favourites, and even getting the top four is not a done deal. So the squad are going to be feeling the pressure. Absolutely still support them on this pod. The effort is always there every single week. And they live a bit on the edge, but less yellow cards would be good, please, lads. Cheers.
Yeah, and we will know Northampton's result as well, which would be an interesting dynamic because they play Friday night away at Bristol. So if AJ could do us a favour, that would be superb. But yeah, that'll be it's going to be a really interesting pressure because Northampton are going to be right up behind us on our tail if they win that Bristol game. So I think
Sam Bedloe. Drop goal to win it for Bristol?
Yeah, I reckon so.
Perfect. So, plenty of Premiership rugby action to discuss as well. So, we have, of course, a top-of-table encounter to look forward to next weekend. It is Saracens visiting the AJ Bell in Sale's, I think it is Sale's penultimate home Premiership game this season. The talk is that the club are expecting a bumper crowd for it, which is always very exciting. But this is, I mean, the last 2 weeks aside, this is the cream of the crop this year. You know, we've been talking for a number of weeks about how it is Saracens, it is Sale, and it is everyone else. And this one promises to be a real sort of titanic encounter. So, James, I'm not going to ask you to do a full preview or anything like that, but you know, how important is this game in the context of Sale season? You've already alluded to it now, but with Saracens being such a standard bearer across the league this year, remember, they've only lost twice in 15 games. How important is this game for not just Sale's top four push, which might be in danger, but also as a measuring stick for how far this team has come and whether or not a Premiership title challenge is realistic this year?
Absolutely. Again, it's a psychological thing. And that's how Saracens keep pushing themselves week on week. And that's why the second half last week for Saracens, they actually nearly lost the game. Why? Because they were coasting against Newcastle. They weren't psychologically on it in the second half. They'll be psychologically on it at the AJ Bell because this is why they win, because they put signposts down during the year and they will say, in case we face Sale, either in a semi-final or in a final, we need to have damaged them mentally by putting out our B-side in the Six Nations and still beating them comfortably. But make no bones about it, they're coming for us. And, you know, we're going to have to play one of our best games of the season to win, especially considering the people that, you know, we're without. You know, you look at Saracens and they, when I say B team, you know, so okay, it's an off week. So okay, you've got Riccioni, Topkins, and Earl probably back with Saracens, three very good players. But they're still going to be without Mako, Farrell, Malins, Itoje, Ezekwe, George. They're already down McFarland and Daly through injury. So, you know, if you lose players like that and you'd expect post-salary cap nonsense, Saracen's squad's going to be seriously stretched. But you look at it, it's got like Tizard, Billy Vunipola, Duncan Taylor, Alex Ozoski, you know, Maitland. Goud is still in outrageous form, having played 350 times for Saracens. And then, you know, the academy's still producing with the likes of Sagan and Theo Dan Hooker. Watch out for him if he's playing. He's a very, very mobile hooker. So, you know, look, I think it's going to be a huge test for this Sale squad. Alex, what do you think, you know, Sale are going to have to do to beat Saracens this week?
It all comes down to territory, I think, this week. It all comes down to playing in Saracens' half, because and part of that is sort of comes down to discipline, because if you give away a penalty, Saracens will move you down the field. It's almost like NFL-esque the way they do it. You know, they will just move the chains and move the chains and move the chains until all of a sudden they're 5 metres away from your line. And yeah, you might defend them and you'll put loads of effort in to stop conceding a try. All right, we'll knock over 3 points and we'll take the ball back and we'll just move the chains again and we'll move the chains again and we'll knock over 3 points. And before you know it, you're 12 points down. And I always come back to the blueprint for beating Sarries hasn't changed from when we beat them at home on that night in January or whatever it was a few seasons ago, when Robbie the Kit Man was serenading the crowd, when Rob Dupree was having one of his best games ever. Because all we did is every time we were in our half, we moved them back into their half and we just put pressure on them and we kept them there. And we did, our discipline was outstanding that day. So that's the blueprint. It's a very easy one in for me to sit here and talk about. Executing it on the field is going to be really, really tough because, as you say, James, they're full of great players and they all know the system and know how to play and play, you know. Not only do they play the system, they're very, very clever and streetwise, which I think we're a bit guilty of not being from time to time. You know, if Sarries are in the positions we've been in when we had yellow cards, you can guarantee that their players will have found ways of, you know, not making it as obvious, not, you know, quite getting the yellow card. I think that we're quite naive in how we give away penalties almost. So it's an incredibly tough game, but I come back to, you know, the way to beat this Sarries team is we know we can match them defensively. We know our attack is really, really good. It's about playing the game entirely in their half, if we can. Obviously, we're not going to, but, you know, keep them in their half. And I think that's why, so we'll come on to selection in a minute, but for me, George Ford starts this game because you've got, wherever Alex Goud plays, if he plays at 15, he's one of the best kind of cover 15s in managing that backfield space. And they've then got the likes of Maitland and, you know, they're very, very good at sort of that defensive back three play. So you need George Ford's tactical kicking, because if it's Rob Dupree and it's, you know, just going up in the air, I don't think, it's almost like Wales kicking to Freddie Stewart. It's not going to result in the outcome we want. So if we can manage that territory, if we can keep the discipline to match that management of territory, so we're not giving away penalties in Sarries' half to let them back into ours, I think our kind of, I still think that when you look at these two games, Northampton Exeter, the style of play is there. The quality is there. We are just, you know, we're 5% off in discipline and not much else. I honestly haven't been annoyed at those two games, because the Northampton game, you're never going to win with 14, 13 men on the pitch. That Manu card really seals the game because of the way Northampton play, because they're so expansive. You're just not going to be able to do it against a team like that. The Exeter game, as we've said, you know, there's loads of positives coming out of those games that are getting overshadowed by the fact that we're letting our league position go, and we were second, and we are second, but are we going to drop down the table? But honestly, I think performance week to week is still good. Because I agree with you, James, that this 1-7 is a bit of a nightmare. And the Bath performance was bad. Like, it wasn't a good performance. But I think I've seen enough in those Northampton-Exeter games to believe that this Sale side is playing well enough to beat Sarries. And as you say, if we take that second half from Exeter, we're going from playing a very similar team to Sarries into playing them, you know. And to be fair, they're going from playing a Newcastle side who will have made life hell for them. So this is two teams who are... It's going to be a great game, but I think it's going to be like a test match in its intensity. And it's not going to be an entertaining, free-flowing game. BT are going to absolutely hate it. They're going to be sat there going, why can't we have Harlequins on? Because it's not going to be enjoyable, free-flowing, expansive rugby. It's going to be hard, horrible, massive physicality. And as I say, test match level intensity. So it's about us getting to that level. And I think the big losses in that are Tom Curry and Manu, because I think they operate at that level week in, week out. But I still think we can get there, and I think we can match Sarries in getting there. And as I say, if we're dominating territory, even if we're not dominating possession, I've got more than enough faith in our defence. And I've got more than enough faith that we've got X Factor in the backs. We've got George Ford, we've got, you know, I mean, we haven't even talked about that Tom Roebuck try. It was absolutely outstanding from Exeter. You know, we've got electric players on the field. We've got physical players on the field. So, yeah, I think that's the blueprint, but it's so easy to talk about and Sarries make it so hard to implement. That's the problem. But, you know, with a massive crowd behind us, I think it's the perfect opportunity to, you know, you talk about Sarries wanting to come and give us a bloody nose. If we beat them at home, that's the doubt back in their minds for a semi-final or a final at the end of the season, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so excited for this one. Like you said, it's like a mini test match. And I think you're right. Ford at 10 is integral. I'd be really interested to see if Luke James comes in at some capacity. I find it, you would assume that maybe there's something going on if he's not playing at 12 at the weekend, but Ryan Mills was against Exeter. But I think, you know, Luke James showed a couple of years ago, he's sort of built for games like this where it's all about playing mistake-free rugby. So I'd be really interested to see whether or not he maybe comes in at 12. Does he come in at 15? You've obviously got Joe Carpenter there as well, who has gone pretty well the last couple of weeks. But yeah, this one's going to be epic. So let's do some quick predictions before we talk Six Nations. Then, so Alex, what do you expect to happen?
Sale 20, Saracens 12. I think we're going to beat him.
I agree. I think it's going to be 19-15 to Sale. But like you said, I don't think it's going to be a particularly free-flowing game. And then, James, what about yourself?
Oh, you've got to back the lads, turn it around now. Take that second half performance in. So, Sale 23, Saracens 18.
Good stuff. So we go from a mini test match to talking about some actual test matches. So we're obviously still talking about the 2023 Six Nations competition, which continued over the weekend. And a little bit of Sale representation. Good to see Ben Curry get on the field again after the conversation me and Alex had a couple of weeks ago about what his test prospects were like off the back of his debut in that English loss to Scotland. But let's go from the top. Ireland continue their Grand Slam push with a 34 points to 20 win over Italy in Italy. And Alex, your thoughts on this one, because, you know, we talk kind of every week at the moment about how, you know, Italy are these gallant losers and their performances are improving, but there's still, you know, a two-try margin at the end of the game. Where did you stand on this one? Because there was, once again, some very promising and very enterprising play from Italy. But at the end of the day, they did lose by two tries to an Ireland 1.5 team.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, from an Irish perspective, it's encouraging that they've got, you know, Casey and Byrne on the field and playing, because they're going into this World Cup relying on Sexton massively and to an extent Gibson Park at nine. So I think that they have just trundle on, don't they? And that Andy Farrell's created a really good squad there, and a really good system that people are fitting into. Italy, yeah, disappointing result, really. I think they've shown so much this Six Nations, and I think it's catching up with them, that kind of how close they got against France. You know, they came up against an England team at Twickenham. It was always going to be a massive ask because England were under so much pressure to perform. I think Ireland at home in Rome, there was an opportunity to make a bit of a statement. Ireland, obviously, with the weakened team, as you say. And I think, you know, it's coming down to now that Italy's players, you know, 5 years ago, Italy didn't have as good players. The players weren't of quality compared to the other teams in Six Nations. And occasionally they made up for it with an inspired team performance and a bit of passion, and et cetera, et cetera. Now, Italy's players are as good as other teams' players. You know, their squad depth that they're building. You only have to look at where these players play. James was talking about, you know, you've got guys at Saracens, you've got guys at Montpellier throughout the top 14, Capuzzo at Toulouse. You know, these are a massive, massive clubs where the Italian internationals are playing. So the quality's there. I think it's now's the real test for Kieran Crowley, especially as kind of head coach, in how do you turn this quality and this almost golden generation of Italian players coming through into real test level competitors. And listen, Italy's World Cup is not 2023, it's 2027. You know, this is a World Cup of kind of hopeful shoots, and maybe they'll have a go at it, but you know, they're not going to do at this World Cup what they should do at the World Cup in 4 years' time. But I still think they'll be disappointed with, as you say, the breadth of the loss, and the fact that it's been three losses in a row, because you look back and you go, they weren't that far away from beating France. They've come up against a really tough England team to beat, and they're two games left. They've got a Wales team who desperately need a win, and a Scotland team who, other than, you know, losing against France that we'll come on to, have been in outstanding form. So it's a frustrating Six Nations from an Italian perspective so far, because it feels like there should have been a result coming out of it. And let's be honest, they should knock over Wales. They're a better team than Wales are. But I'm just really hopeful that there's still progression in this group, because I think it's stalled a little bit. Everyone else has advanced. That's the problem. Italy have progressed, but everyone else has progressed. And Ireland are such a quality team now. It's the equivalent of Italy playing the All Blacks. You'd never expect them to win. So this isn't a disaster stations. But I think there really needs to be a win this Six Nations to kind of maintain that momentum from that Wales result last season when no one saw it coming. Because otherwise, you know, you're going into a World Cup with feeling a little bit flat, I think. So, yeah, listen, it's not the end of the world for Italy, but there's a few concerns. And for Ireland, I mean, you know, the juggernaut just rolls on, doesn't it? And Grand Slam looks almost certain.
Menoncello, you want to talk about the golden generation. Menoncello looks a player, 20 years old. Started at 12 as well, you know, it can also shift out to the wing. That's what you need to see. You know, you had Garbisi a couple of years ago. You had Capuozzo last year. It's seeing just these players like prop ups. So Menoncello at 12, the Canone brothers at 4 and 8. It just kind of feels like, you know, 2 years ago we're like, well, that Garbisi looks like he might get there, and Capuozzo looks like he might be a player in a couple of years. It's the fact that there's more of those players coming through the squad in those key positions that makes such a big difference, and it makes them such an exciting team to watch for the next few years. And you bang on about it being 2027 where they can make a real impact, fingers crossed. James, any thoughts on Italy-Ireland?
I thought they had Ireland a bit rattled. I thought, here we go, this is Ireland stutter just ahead of the World Cup standard. But no, they came through well. If they're playing a good brand of rugby, it's good to watch as a neutral, and the games are competitive enough and long enough that actually, out of all the games, you kind of look for more of the Italy game now, which is a big difference. They are gallant losers, But I think they're going to be peaking at the next World Cup. Most of their players, you know, will be sort of late 20s by then. There are some players like Brex and BG and things like that that are going to drop off. But they're players who have been average players in a below average team. You know, now they are kind of the squad players. Brex is in good form, don't get me wrong. But Melanchello, I think, will end up at 13 and Garbisi at 12. That was Garbisi's only third start at 10 for the whole year. He's been playing at 12 for Montpellier. And I think that he plays too far behind the gain line, I think, for me. And that's been a problem for some time. So I wonder if he'll end up at 12 and they have to find a 10. But they've got a couple of other good 10s coming through the age groups, actually. It's been a problem position for them, but they're going to be all right there. And actually, Tommy Allen's really progressed, I think, playing at Quinns. And I think he should be starting at 10 for me, for them. So it's interesting times to be an Italy fan. And I think they go in favourites to the Wales game.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point about the style of rugby Italy playing, because they are just running it out from their 22, and they kind of, they almost don't seem to care that that's a bit of a nonsensical option in this world of, you know, we must kick it, we must play territory, that, you know, every other team is playing, you know, talking about kicking games. It's equivalent to what England cricket are doing in Test match cricket now. They're just playing such a different brand of rugby. I mean, Italy aren't getting the results to go with it. But you are right that it's just so exciting to watch. So from an Italy perspective, listen, if that's going to, you'd rather lose a game playing like that and get a load of people in the crowd and build the kind of support base and start selling out Stadio Olimpico for every home game than, you know, be playing rugby like England are playing at the moment and, you know, still losing and just not entertaining people. I honestly think that entertainment factor is massive, because you look at where rugby is, it needs to be entertaining. And Italy are incredibly entertaining to watch, regardless of results. So it's another big positive. I mean, I think the results will come as well, but I just think, you know, even if they don't, it's so nice to see a team play that kind of way.
Well, funny you mention all this stuff, because then we go on to probably the worst game of the weekend. England picking up the win 20 points to 10 over Wales at the Principality Stadium. James, I'll give you first dibs on this one. I mean, is there anything you really want to talk about from this game? It wasn't a classic.
But I think it's a more traditional February Six Nations game. You know, I think that you'd normally have all three games looking something like this in February of most Six Nations. I think this Six Nations has been, for attacking rugby, head and shoulders above anything we've seen for some time. And I think that there was, that, you know, there's not much to take out from a Wales perspective. You know, I think that they tried. That's it, really. They, especially in attack, are in really serious trouble there. I think Forshaw might be starting to sort the defence, which doing it when you're in the middle of a competition is quite difficult to do. So I wouldn't put it past Wales being difficult to beat at the World Cup. But attacking-wise, they look non-clueless. And the non-backing of Bigger, firstly, as captain. And then secondly, you know, giving Owen Williams a thing. You know, I think it's a bit of a weird one, because Dan Bigger thrives off being that kind of overconfident, almost borderline arrogance on the pitch type thing that just drives the whole team on. And yes, he's not the most creative player in the world, but when he is just forcefully driving a team forward, you know, you saw this with Saints, you know, what he did with them when he first arrived and what he's been doing with Wales for 100 caps. So, not much from Wales. For England, I thought that they ground it out in an old-fashioned England way. I mean, you know, this is how England tend to play. And my only concern is Farrell's not got his kicking boots. If they had, they would have won a lot more comfortably. I don't think they were really under threat, really. Not really. There was a moment in the middle of the second half maybe where he thought Wales could come back, but I think that England had this pretty much sewed up physically up front and defensively very sound in the midfield. And Freddie Stewart had an absolute stormer of a game, his best game in an England shirt. He was absolutely fantastic. Ben Curry, I thought, came off the bench and showed some really nice touches. You know, there was a conversation on Twitter earlier in the week where kind of saying, you know, look, actually, you know, you can afford to be a bit more selfish here. Someone like Lewis Ludlam, he's all about, you know, blood, sweat and tears, and he looks to carry the ball at every available opportunity, which means he stands out. Ben Curry's all about helping other people look good and hitting the rucks and making the most tackles and having the highest work rate and picking the ball up on the half volley and drawing and passing. I mean, Ludlam wouldn't be able to do he either chooses not to do some of them or he couldn't do them. You know, Ben Curry's skill set's a lot higher. But really, I think to really take the step forward, he needs to just show a little bit of selfishness and look to bring his physicality, especially if he's coming off the bench because he's only got 20 minutes. So he needs to carry that speed he has into every single contact. So I thought from a sales perspective, that was quite nice.
Alex, any thoughts on England-Wales?
Yeah, on Freddie Stewart, the Telegraph gave Alex Dombrun a 9 in this game, which I can only presume mean Freddie Stewart got about 18. It was an absolutely ridiculous player rating. I just wanted to get that out there. But honestly, Freddie Stewart was absolutely outstanding. I thought Ollie Lawrence was outstanding again. It is so, so typical of English rugby that it takes Ollie Lawrence moving to Bath for people to realise he's any good. He was absolutely brilliant at Worcester. And England, England rugby in the RFU and the Twickenham lot can't get their heads around there's anyone good north of Watford, unfortunately. So I think Ollie Lawrence was excellent. Agree, Farrell's kicking boots completely disappeared, which is a concern. But he's got a massive amount of mentality, so I think he'll be back. And I think it's just what you expect from Steve Borthwick's England. Listen, people were complaining on Twitter and stuff. It's like, well, what did you expect when you hired Steve Borthwick? You're not getting attractive rugby. This is what I don't get. Number one, there isn't the patience in the English fan base for attractive rugby. They want wins. They don't, they're not going to let you get away with doing what Italy are doing and playing attractive rugby and losing. They just wouldn't have it. So you're going to get boring rugby. And England dominated a boring game. Wales, got absolutely nothing in attack. That is the one concern for England, that this Wales team. I mean, the Kevin Sinfield defence is obviously developing, and James made a good point about the Mike Forshaw defence in Wales. Kevin Sinfield, same kind of task with England. But their attack, I mean, what points did they score in this game? An intercept try and a penalty that was actually, I thought, Wales had a tackle line on the wrong side and it came from a kickoff. So, they offered nothing. It's a massive concern, but you look at how Italy play and you look at how their age grades have been over the last 5 years. There's an excitement. There's an optimism. You look at how Wales play and how their age grades have been over the last 5 years. It's just awful. It's dire. It says a lot about the state of Welsh rugby. And let's be honest, the WRU is answerable for all of this. Because domestic rugby and international rugby in Wales is now, going down the pan because it's just been massively mismanaged. They had an absolute golden generation of players and they had all that chance for investment and it's just all fallen away. And the domestic teams are poor. They're all bottom of the URC. The international team is bottom of the Six Nations. The contract situation is dire. It's a horrendous, horrendous time for Welsh rugby. They make the RFU look competent, which is a really, really difficult thing to do. So, this Wales team, it's hard to comment on them without acknowledging that they've been massively hamstrung by awful administrators. So, Warren Gatland is going to need to be a miracle worker for them to get anything out of the World Cup other than not getting out of their group and going home.
You fear for Alex King, don't you? The new attack coach. And look, he's got, a one hand tied behind his back. There is a dearth of talent in Welsh rugby, but there is still talent. But my goodness, he looks like he might be one and done at the test level. To score 10 points against England, to just be so poor and look so rigid. And blunt, which is what Wales were for the entire game against England and have been at different points throughout the tournament. You do wonder whether or not this is a step too far for him. And, with Mike Forshaw, at least you can see the signs of improvement. But yeah, the attack for Wales is a real concern. Final game of the weekend, though, two teams I don't have to worry too much about attacking prowess. France 32, Scotland 21, I think it was. Yes, 32-21. Alex, the Grand Slam's not there for France, but they've done the business against Scotland, and for Scotland, it's back to being gallant losers again.
Yeah, I think it's a great game, obviously characterised by the two red cards, which sort of made it as exciting as it was. A massive win for France and massive to get the bonus point as well.
I should have said, if you fear for Alex King's future at the test level, you have to fear for Mohamed Hawass's future as well, because two red cards in 3 years in this competition, like, good Lord, that's a red flag.
Yeah, absolutely. And just like, it's complete idiocy, isn't it? On a rugby field.
And he's got to suspend his sentence for assault off the field as well. So he's not going to be trusted at the World Cup. He's a goner.
Only France could still pick someone like that, by the way. You would not get away with that, picking them in England. You'd get absolutely crucified. But in France, that's just normal course, isn't it? So I think the mentality from France to get that bonus point was really good. I think Scotland were clearly very frustrated all game. And I think this is where they're going to struggle. This is why they couldn't have won a Grand Slam, because, you know, 30 minutes in, Dewan van der Merwe is throwing a tantrum because a ball doesn't go his way. You know, that's not Grand Slam World Cup mentality. That's gallant loser mentality. It was a massive test for Scotland and one they ultimately failed. You got Jamie Ritchie whinging to the ref at the end, getting March 10. This is not what you don't see championship level teams do that. So I think it was a realization for Scotland of, you know, they're a good team. They're probably the third best team in the Six Nations pretty comfortably, but that is all they are. They're not better than France, and they're probably not going to be better than Ireland. They're going to get found out there too. For France, I think a really positive result, bonus point win with 14 men, obviously against 14 men. Let Scotland back into the game massively, but as I say, that mentality at the end, and I mean, they've got Gael Ficke, who is, you know, I was talking about mentality before. That's a boy with mentality. That's a boy who's going to get to the quarterfinal, semi-final of the World Cup and show up. For someone, you can just tell he's been in the international arena for so long from such a young age, to score that try at the end. But also, I think he leads that French team. He was the one moving him around the field almost when Dupont was off his feet. So, France have still got a few questions to answer, but I think to come out of that game with a bonus point win is massive for them, and I think they'll still think that this title is theirs to kind of is there for the taking. If Ireland slip up, then France are right back in the conversation. So it makes it a really intriguing run into the Six Nations, I think, assuming Ireland do slip up. But yeah, to be honest, I don't usually dislike Scottish rugby that much, but they made me dislike them on Sunday. It was very, you know, toys out the pram stuff. So I was quite happy when Ficke scored at the end.
James, your thoughts on the final game of the weekend?
I thought it was just a fantastic game to watch. And, you know, Scotland were right in it. Right in this game. Obviously, the Ficke tries made the scoreline look pretty healthy. But France, most of their wins in the last 9 months have been super close. And I'm just worried for France, you know, in a way that, you know, the home World Cup could propel them to win it. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I still think they're probably the favourites, but they are winning. They've got this mentality now of they can win from any situation. You know, they can win tight games. But I just worry that sometimes with France, the support can turn a negative thing. And actually, the pressure cooker of a home World Cup, it's a bit like New Zealand winning in New Zealand, the pressure that they were operating under with the press and the crowds. Only one of these close games, as we saw at Saints last week, which is influenced by a refereeing decision or decisions that make it a short, small loss. And France don't win the World Cup, or they get knocked out in the quarterfinal or something ridiculous like that. All possible in knockout rugby. I don't know. I don't think they've developed as much in the last 9 months as a team as people give them credit for. They're still playing in the same way. They're testing their depth. They're winning close games. It could all still work out really well for them. But I'd like to see them winning a bit more comfortably against the likes of Italy and Scotland, honestly. Not scoring tries in the final 5 minutes to make the scorelines look good.
Well, there you have it. That's the pod for this week. Loads of rugby to talk about. So thank you to everyone who's been listening in this week and obviously as well in previous weeks. Thank you to Alex and James for coming on the pod with such hot takes about all the rugby that we saw this weekend. It's much appreciated chatting to you guys again. And we will talk to our listeners next week with, albeit less Six Nations chat, but we'll find time to talk about the Sam Bedlow signing, which we haven't got round to today. So just want to acknowledge that. We're going to talk about that next week. And obviously we have that huge mini test match against Saracens to discuss as well. So thank you to everyone for listening and we'll chat to you soon.
Hi, it's Dean Steiger from Sail Shark Supporters Club here. Just wanted to let you know about our Beat the Sharks quiz. That's coming up very soon. 1st of March, we'll be at Manchester Rugby Club. And the 8th of March, we'll be at Sandbach Rugby Club. Get together with a few of your friends. Enter a team of four. Email us at quiz@sailsupporters.co.uk and we'll reply with some more details. Should be two great evenings. Take on a team of four players with some fantastic prizes for the winning team. If you can't get together a team of four, just email us anyway and we'll put some teams together on the night. So we're really looking forward to those two events.